bet the board.
What do you mean you don't bet?
I mean, I don't bet. You know, I don't gamble. I don't. I never have, and I never will.
Yeah, right.
I'll bet you $20 I can get you gambling before the end of the day.
You owe me $15,000, pal.
Pay him. Pay that man his money.
It's the Bet the Board podcast.
God likes me. He really, really likes me.
In the end, I wound up right back where I started. I could still pick winners, and I could still make money for all kinds of people back home. And why mess up a good thing?
Here's Payne Insider and Todd Furman.
Welcome into the Bet the Board podcast, the first Monday edition, and like we like to call it around here, Overreaction Monday. 14 big games in the books, two Monday night games that we will get to later. As always, Bet the Board powered by Bet Online, and the big games of the evening brought to you by the American Gaming Association. And Payne, how did the first Sunday go for you? We'll get into your thoughts in just a second. I just want to make sure you're surviving after week one.
Yeah, it was a solid week one. Carried the momentum from preseason. Couple results that we'll probably talk about and rant about moving forward, but overall, a very good week one.
And that voice you hear, of course, Payne Insider. You can follow him on Twitter, at Payne Insider. I'm Todd Furman. You can follow me there as well, at Todd Furman. And, of course, follow the podcast, at Bet the Board Pod. And visit our website, bettheboardpodcast.com. Payne, I think I hit everything there, didn't I?
You did well. Solid work.
I try. That might be where this podcast peaks, but want to get to your take, as we like to do, kind of overreact or underreact. Have to warn loyal fans out there, your team won't go 16-0. Your team won't go 0-16, although the Browns making a compelling case for being 1-15 at absolute best. But Payne, what really jumped off the page at you after watching the first 14 games of week one?
Well, I think that's kind of the biggest thing that you hit on the head there, is not overreacting to 60 minutes of football. At this point, no matter how good your team looked or how poor they looked, you're really not looking at anything more than about a one-point adjustment in your power ratings.
Well, when you talk about power ratings, I know a lot of our listeners probably don't have their own power numbers all set up, and you try and figure it out. We, of course, will look at some of the look-ahead lines that were available and try and figure out where the overreactions came in the market. But let's just kind of go down the list for some of the games and overall performances for individuals, teams, units that you were surprised in a good way, and some that really disappointed you from what you thought was going to be the case coming into the opening week.
Yeah, I think the biggest one is Carson Wentz. And I've kind of said all along, great kid. He's a hard worker. The city of Philadelphia is really going to love him. I do think there's still that ceiling there, though. Your comparable is probably, you know, a high-end Alex Smith. And I think there's just boatloads of average QBs in general making $15 million a year. That's kind of the going rate. So I was kind of down on him a little bit when you have to move up, give up those assets. You're paying Sam Bradford $11 million bonus. Doug Peterson brings in his guy Chase Daniels, pays him $7 million a year. So that's kind of why I was down on him. But in general, I liked what I saw from Wentz. Right now, we're looking at the fourth-rated QB so far this week, but I think you kind of have to pause things a little bit. When Week 17 concludes and we kind of go put a bow tie on the season, I think we're looking at a historically bad Browns defense.
Oh, when you talk about the Browns defense, I'm sure we'll have plenty of time to pick Cleveland apart. Wentz's performance, more indicative of Cleveland defensively or showing upside for what he can be? Or we should really take a wait-and-see type approach, knowing that he'll perform in prime time on Monday night against the Bears defense that'll provide a much stiffer challenge?
It's definitely a wait-and-see approach. You liked what you saw from him. A lot of that was attributed to how bad this Browns defense is. It'll be interesting to see if the money ball tactics carry over to the NFL. We know that's what the Cleveland Browns organization is going to be doing moving forward. They released a lot of cornerbacks in the offseason. The defense was very bad, and again, it's going to be historically bad when you go back and look at this season. So you have to pause a little bit on Wentz, but you like what you've seen from him. Again, it's going to be all about repetitions. He did hold on to the ball a little too long in a lot of instances in week one.
And you mentioned Wentz, one of the quarterbacks that obviously turn heads and requires our attention in this lovely gambling business. As far as some of the other quarterbacks, big names are maybe not so big names in new places. Brock Osweiler, his performance, I guess, give him a level-headed grade for how he performed there with the Houston Texans. You look at Sean Hill in Minnesota, didn't really do anything to impress or wow in that particular spot. I think right there in your backyard, Ryan Tannehill did what was expected of him, albeit in a loss to Seattle. Dak Prescott in his debut. Any of those quarterback performances jump off the page at you?
They didn't. I liked what I saw from Brock Osweiler, but I think the biggest thing for me was Thursday's game. I liked what I saw from Denver, and we kind of spoke about this. And while the name on the back of the jersey isn't Manning, from efficiency metrics, you couldn't get any worse. And what I really wanted to take away from that game was Denver's offense, especially against a solid defense. Were they going to limit the offense to kind of hide and protect Simeon? And from what I saw, that wasn't the case. It was the full playbook. Kubiak kind of emptied his shells. He stayed aggressive, as you know he can. He's not overly aggressive guy, but I think things will come along with Simeon, and I like that they didn't limit the playbook. Again, he's kind of a little slow to read, react, and release. That needs to be a touch quicker, and he got some guys almost killed over the middle, but I think that's going to come with reps and feeling comfortable. So I really liked what I saw from Simeon, and it's not going to look like much in the box score, but this was not a limited offensive call set. They gave him the entire repertoire of plays.
Well, fortunately for Trevor Siemian, he goes up against what we both think will be one of the league's worst defenses this coming week with some extra time to prepare. Indianapolis, absolutely shredded by Matthew Stafford and company. Andrew Luck looked the part of a franchise quarterback. The problem for him, he can't play 11 positions on defense. Colts outlook, we know that Detroit took all sorts of sharp money. Are the Colts going to need to win every game this season like a poor man Saints needing to score 40 points to stay competitive?
This was one of the more interesting games because I gave out the over in this game, and immediately we kind of saw that defense that we talked about on our preseason podcast, the back seven being almost the worst in the NFL. They bring in Patrick Robinson. They bring in Antonio Cromartie late. Both leave the game with injuries, so it made that secondary even worse. But what we saw from the Colts was they really tried offensively early on in that game to be the defense's best friend. They tried getting Gore involved. They tried slowing down the game, and we saw the Lions quickly got out to a lead. That's not how the Colts offense is best suited. You kind of open the playbook, let Andrew Luck do his thing because he is one of the best quarterbacks. I do not care that he was injured last year. I don't care that, you know, he didn't have a great offensive line last year. He is going to bounce back this season in a big way. He was our number one most efficient quarterback through, you know, all the games excluding tonight. So you got to just open up the offense, play shootouts, and I think that's going to be the best way the Colts can win games.
And what do you make of the Detroit Lions? They clearly showed some poise offensively. As you mentioned, they got out to the big lead, let the Colts back into it. But I have to give Matt Stafford and company credit. Despite facing that 35-34 deficit, they marched down the field to kick the game-winning field goal with 4 seconds to go.
Yeah, Matthew Stafford showed some poise there. I loved him getting into his receivers late there, not getting out of bounds. So that was I like Stafford. He looked calm, cool, and poised. But again, let's kind of take that with a grain of salt. The defense he was facing is not only bad, but it becomes historically bad when you talk about all the players that were injured on that side of the ball. It's why you saw steam on Detroit. It's why you saw sharp guys going over this number. This game flew over the total, and you're talking about a Colts team that was shut out for the early part of that game.
Not sure how to really respond to what we saw Sunday night. I know you and I have been plagued by the Arizona Cardinals trying to figure out when they're going to bring their A game, so to speak. New England does what they do best, prepare better than their opponent, come in with a game plan, and execute. What are the major takeaways from Jimmy Garoppolo's debut on the positive as you look at New England, who now has 3 home games before Tom Brady comes back in Week 5? And Arizona, on the other side, had all offseason to prepare. Carson Palmer looked his normal pedestrian self, and a defense that just couldn't get off the field on third down, allowing the Pats to convert 3rd and 15, 3rd and 11. I mean, you name it.
I don't think this is anything new, but it kind of goes to a higher tier now because we all love Bruce Arians. But Belichick just absolutely put his foot in Arians' ass last night. That's basically what it came down to. Arians, for the first time in a while, was extremely tentative. He wasn't aggressive on defense at all. The play calling out of the two-minute warning was horrific. It was a conservative run. It was a pass from under center that was like a three-step drop, jump ball to a receiver that was like 5'10". You get a holding penalty there. They did some exotic play to Ellington, and you just have to scratch your head because the fact that you thought a Bill Belichick-led defense in that situation was going to be out of position is just so nuts to me. So that's what I took away from that game. Arizona, when you looked at their preseason, they played their number ones about as little as any other team, and that was pretty evident. Jimmy Garoppolo, you have to praise what he did out there, but again, that defense was extremely tentative. They're kind of just letting them dink and dunk. And when you have receivers that are probably the best route runners at 7 yards and in, it made Garoppolo's day pretty easy, just finding wide open guys in that 5 to 7 yard window. So Garoppolo did have a good game. When you look at some of the efficiency metrics, I know what his quarterback percentage is going to say, and his quarterback rating says that he was, you know, a top 10 quarterback thus far this week. But when you look at some of the efficiency metrics and dig a little deeper, he wasn't that great.
Yeah, and I think we're going to see him. You know, it'll be interesting, like we always talk about, when teams get film, how the Patriots will adjust, what the expectations will be for him. Three home games where he'll be favored, and the Patriots kind of took an us-against-the-world mentality into the game against Arizona. I'm not going to lie, I laid 6 myself, thought I was going to be sitting pretty as that number ballooned out to 9.5. Had no chance cashing that ticket and was 100% on the wrong side in that particular game. Bills Ravens, one of the more lackluster games of the weekend. Not sure if I want to give the Ravens credit for gutting out a 13-7 win or the Bills offense for regressing, but I do have to respect Baltimore holding the Bills in check, only allowing about 180 yards of total offense, and the Bills just couldn't get anything going in the fourth quarter when they faced a field goal and 6-point deficit.
Yeah, I mean, the Ryan brothers, we saw it at their finest. I mean, this is kind of what they are. Some takeaways from that game, though, is a game that I watched. I kind of wanted to monitor things, and Joe Flacco, still feeling the effects of the knee surgery, was very unsure of himself in the pocket. And listen, the guy wasn't Mike Vick back there ever. But you would watch this team. There was a lot of rollouts, and for his size and stature, he could move around. That just wasn't the case in week one. So it's something that I kind of want to monitor moving forward, especially kind of when you look at the landscape of that offensive line. Eugene Monroe goes into retirement. You lose your prized guard, Ussimile, who signs that monster deal in Oakland. So I kind of want to see things. That Buffalo defense, we talked about it. We didn't think they were going to be very good. So I want to take a little bit away from that. Tyrod Taylor, listen, you didn't get revenge against your old guys. They kind of knew what you liked to do, and there was a great defensive game plan installed. When you have a guy that you've kind of seen every day for a few years, you kind of know what he brings to the table, and that was the case. Baltimore's defense knew exactly what Tyrod tendency liked to do. They knew his tendencies, and that was a great defensive performance for a Ravens defense.
You know, before we kind of shift gears away from some of the things we saw, I wanted your quick thoughts on two other games. Green Bay and Jacksonville, we know sharp money came in on the Jags. Hopefully, folks, depending on which side you were on, you know, grab the best of the number. A game that had a ton of first-half fireworks, 21-17 going into the break, and both teams only muster 2 field goals apiece in the second half. Green Bay didn't look all that impressive for me. It was more Aaron Rodgers making the plays that we've grown accustomed to from Aaron Rodgers. I guess Jacksonville showed me a little bit more than I expected. We'll get a much better indication this weekend when they head out west. But what were your takeaways from that Packers-Jags game?
This is a game, honestly, that I haven't watched a ton of. We're now recording at, you know, 7 a.m. Vegas time, so I'm going to go back, watch some of the All-22. So I didn't get to see that game in great detail. Certainly watched it on my television, but I like to go back, look at the film, see if there's things that I can pick up. But in general, this isn't a Packers team over the last few seasons that's done very well on the road. We saw some signs of fatigue late. You get a team from Wisconsin playing in Florida. It's 90 degrees. It's very humid. We saw them wear down a little bit late. The Jaguars had a good chance there. They kind of screwed the pooch on the fourth and one on the final drive there. You have to like what you did see from the Jaguars, especially after that preseason third game where their ones went against the Bengals ones and just got absolutely dominated. This looked like a competent team. We're going to have to see, though. The defense still has some issues. And that's got to be what turns this team around. You talk about Gus Bradley coming over from Seattle. He was going to instill that physical style of defense. And right now, the defense still continues to be an issue. You effectively get three first-round draft picks this year, and it goes all defense. Miles Jack would have been a first-rounder, some question marks with the knee. And you get your guy you lost last year to an early knee injury. So the defense has got to be the calling card. You kind of look at head coaches, the team has to resemble their identity. And right now, that's not the case for Jacksonville. And until that becomes the case, there's a very, very small ceiling.
Well, funny you mentioned knee injuries, or maybe not so funny as it pertains to the San Diego Chargers and their season outlook. San Diego builds a 27-10 lead. Look like they're going to get a season-defining win in week one going into Arrowhead, a 7-point underdogs. And they end up falling apart. Kansas City comes roaring back to win that game 33-27. Of course, the big takeaway there, Keenan Allen appears lost for the season with a torn ACL. How do we approach what we saw from Kansas City and San Diego, considering the Chargers, a team that a lot of the professionals thought would not only go over their win total at 7, but had a very good chance to compete for the division as a dark horse?
You just really have to feel for Philip Rivers. No mystery. We're very high on the Chargers this year. We saw that offensive line really improved in that first half. We bet them over 7 wins. This is going to not only be a tough loss to overcome, but it's saddled with the loss of Keenan Allen for the year. And I know this is a cheap franchise, but that West is wide open, and you have to contemplate this morning, if you're GM Tom Telesco, am I picking up the phone this morning? Am I going to dial the 216 area code and see if the Browns are interested in dealing Gordon? I'm not Mr. like Madden where we're trading guys and doing unrealistic trades. I think you really have to pick up the phone, because not only is it going to help this team in a wide open division, but I think it's going to lift their spirits. And that's what you're going to need after blowing a loss like that to a division opponent and seeing your top wide receiver in Keenan Allen go down.
Yeah, I mean, you saw what we expected to see from San Diego. 6 of 6 converting third downs, prolonging drives. Melvin Gordon looked like the running back a lot of us expected to see last year in his rookie season if he would have been healthy. Danny Woodhead doing Danny Woodhead type things. Defensively, they were able to at least slow down the Chiefs. We know that they're not going to be a brick wall defensively. Then all of a sudden, they go 1 for 9 on third down, and Spencer Ware goes absolutely bonkers as part of this Chiefs offense.
Yeah, it was tough to watch that game late. Fortunately, they did cover the spread. They held on for a lot of backers, so that was a positive thing for the Sharp guys. But it was tough. You kind of saw it going. The offense kind of went away from Melvin Gordon in that second half. I thought that's kind of when you wanted to kick it in. The offensive line was performing very well. You want to kind of see if the pressure isn't going to be all on Philip Rivers' shoulders this season. Melvin Gordon was running well. Danny Woodhead was running well. I kind of wanted to see that offensive line continue to take over, see if this was something they could establish, because it hasn't been in years past. That's kind of the time you want to work on things. You're up 27-10 late. Let's see if we can run the ball. Let's see if we can find out if this is an added dimension to the offense that we can not only put on tape for other teams that they're going to have to game plan for. That was kind of what was disappointing to me.
Simply amazing when you look at it. But like we said, make sure you don't overreact, or in some cases, honestly, underreact to just 1 week's worth of results. That's Payne Insider. You can follow him on Twitter at Payne Insider. I am Todd Furman. You can follow me there as well at Todd Furman. And of course, the podcast at Bet the Board Pod, with some great updates and plenty of information you need to be successful throughout the course of the fall. And Payne, like we always do on Mondays, we take a look at what teams disappointed us, what teams surprised us, and more importantly, how those performances impact the market. And as we go through next Sunday's games, at least at a very high level look, I think what jumps off the page may as well start at the top of the rotation, with Tennessee going on the road to take on Detroit. These numbers courtesy of the Westgate Superbook as look-ahead numbers. Of course, we always use our BetOnline current market prices. Lions were projected to be a 3.5-point favorite. BetOnline now has the Lions a 5.5-point chalk. The total on that game, 46.5.
Yeah, I think this is probably a good time to let everybody know that we are being distributed on OutKick, the coverage this year, which is a nice added dimension for this podcast. But it kind of plays in that Marcus Mariota was the worst rated quarterback in week one so far. Granted, four quarterbacks are going tonight. And when you get Blaine Gabbert and Case Keenum kind of vying for things, yeah, that could change. But Marcus Mariota was all types of horrific. And I mean, this was the worst performance of the entire weekend. So you are going to get an overreaction because of that. We saw what the Lions did. Home opener now with some optimism. We're not really looking at a key number here at 5.5, so it'll be interesting to see. If it gets up a little bit to 6, maybe some interest in the Titans, but that's kind of they kind of floated it in no man's land and kind of will let the market and the sharp bettors determine where they go from here. Are you going down to the key number of 4? Are you going up to a secondary key number in 6?
Yeah, and you mentioned the Titans. I mean, they give up 2 defensive touchdowns, lose that game 25-16 to the Vikings. And the game that changed all the momentum, having watched that one pretty closely, Tennessee up 10-6, look like they're driving in with a chance to at least kick a field goal, worst case scenario. Mariota makes a very poor decision, turns into a 77-yard interception return for Hendricks, and that more or less sealed the fate for the Titans. Baltimore Ravens, Cleveland Browns, you're looking at Baltimore, a 6-point favorite right now on the road. Total there, 43.5 at BetOnline. This number heading into week one, the Ravens a 3.5-point favorite, continuing our trend from disappointing performances and what might be historic levels of ineptitude. The Cleveland Browns, this move jump off the page of you by any stretch?
Yes. And I'm going to end up having to do it. And
you're going to be that guy. You're going to be that guy.
Listen, and this is kind of as well as I can put this. You know something about this. When taking home fives from the bar becomes acceptable for so long, Brady Quinn, Spurgeon, Wynn, Austin Davis, Colt McCoy, a retirement home version of Jeff Garcia, suddenly a 6 in dim lighting, RG3, looks like a 10 in leather pants. And that's what Hugh Jackson has gotten himself into here. And it's unfortunate because RG3 is abysmal. But if you can take away what I saw with Joe Flacco and potentially having some issues with his mobility, and you're getting an inflated price here at 6 at home, home opener in a division game, I would be stunned if we are not seeing professionals on the Browns this week.
I guess we'll have to keep tabs on how high this number will actually go. But I like your analogy there, but Payne, at this point in my life, I'm past taking home 5 from bars or nightclubs, all right? So I just want to be clear for
that. Retired.
Retired. I am retired from that line of work. We leave that to the producer, Sam, in this, who is the one bringing down the average age for our production.
Now, here's a question, Todd. Taco night on Sunday.
Yes.
Was she involved in this? Because I can picture you in the kitchen kind of cooking the meat, and she's in there dicing the tomatoes and the lettuce, and, you know, Carlos Santana's playing in the background. What did Taco night at the Furman household look like on Sunday?
There was no Carlos Santana, but yes, she was part of Taco night, which is a little bit different when you do Taco night with a vegetarian, so that kind of throws a few wrinkles in there. But it was also with my former roommate, who had to give us the play-by-play of his ongoing relationship. So it's always good to, you know, get his take, you know, spend some quality time together. They both came over for the beginning of the fourth quarter. He was rooting heavily for some of his fantasy guys. He knows how much I hate that. But I did feel it for him, needing points out of John Brown. He got absolutely zero productivity in that fourth quarter.
We could have used a couple catches from John Brown ourselves.
Hey, every now and again, you need a catcher to go your way. And you know, when we look at the Cardinals, this is a team in the market right now who are not sure how everything is going to play out. Arizona would have been an 8.5-point favorite against Tampa Bay going into week two had things gone according to plan. Right now, you're looking at a soft 7 for the Cardinals as they play host to the Bucs. Are you surprised at all that the market has, you know, overreacted maybe 1.5, even some 6.5 starting to pop right now as the bloom is off the rose in Phoenix?
Well, that's the big number to kind of look at. If this goes from 7 to 6.5, that's your second largest key number. That's the one you want to focus on. It really doesn't take much effort and energy, and you know this being behind the counter, saying, hey, let's move this from a dead number, 8.5, down to 7.5 or 7. But you have to like what you've seen from the Bucks. This is a team that we were high on. Obviously got us to the window on Sunday with a huge performance from Jameis Winston. Started a little slow, but as you know, if you've watched games, he is a gamer. He kind of comes out amped, sometimes gets himself overamped, starts flying balls high. We saw wide open Mike Evans in the back of the end zone just get completely missed. As the game progresses, he starts to settle in, and he gets better as the game goes along. So I think 7's probably a number that was a little more fair from an opener perspective. I could see this continue to creep down a little bit. That secondary for Arizona looks brutal. I know you have Tyrann Mathieu back, but there's a situation going on at cornerback there, and the way they play, there has to be a complete reboot on that defense in terms of what they're doing strategically. Still not getting pressure to the quarterback at all. So that defense really scares me.
Yeah, I think when you have a converted running back out there trying to cover space, it changes the dynamic a little bit. And as we saw, there were a number of missed opportunities last night with Chris Hogan running right by for the first touchdown, and other instances where that inexperience showed up against a pretty green quarterback in Jimmy Garoppolo.
Yeah, absolutely. And you kind of have to ask yourself some questions here. There was opportunities to go out and get a Leon Hall. They were talking to him basically all summer, kind of just gauging how well his back injury was coming along. You saw Antonio Cromartie was on the free agent wire for a long time. Finally, the Colts pulled the trigger, brought him in. He had a very, very respectable, even at his age, game for the Colts. So you're going to have to question those two moves. They were in contact with them all offseason, and they didn't pull the trigger on either. You have to think that that might hurt at this point.
It'll be very interesting to watch where this number continues to trend, especially on Monday morning. As you mentioned, that key number, we are starting to see some 6.5s pop up. So by the time the market settles out, it should be a very intriguing watch. And the only other game with what we'd call a somewhat intriguing line move from where the number would have been going into week one versus where it sits now, the Denver Broncos, a 3.5-point favorite on the look-ahead number. Now a 6-point chalk, some extra time to prepare for that Colts much maligned secondary, where the number is out to 6 at BetOnline.
Yeah, I'm not sure there right now at this point. There's a ton of interest for me on the side. Again, I kind of alluded to how the Colts are going to have to play if they want to be successful. And again, I alluded to kind of the playbook not being diminished, or, you know, kind of that them going basic playbook for Trevor Siemian. So that game could have some points there. We're early. This is Monday morning. We still haven't done a ton of things yet at this point, but it's a game to monitor. The other big move was Vikings Packers, obviously a little bit injury related there, but the Packers went from a pick 'em on the look ahead to they're looking at like 2.5-point favorite now, Todd.
Yeah, 2.5 at BetOnline, and I actually did want to get your thoughts there, because all the time we talk about, you know, what the key numbers are, after watching week one where so many of these games fell as 1-point outcomes, all which were spreads right around that price range, it really made the difference if you took +1 or -1, which you don't want to say shouldn't factor into the thought process, but it's distinctly different from what we've grown accustomed to previously in the National Football League.
Week one certainly felt like the preseason, and that's something we can kind of touch on a little bit. Preseason, that key number, not only just 3, but more so 1. The teams don't want to play overtime games. There's an affinity for going for 2, working on things offensively. So you see a lot of games land 1. This week we saw a lot of missed extra points in games falling that way, but bookmakers did a good job. I think things are kind of wide open this season. So there's a lot of tight games. Bookmakers did a good job there. And obviously it's important. I know, Sam, you won a game getting the best of the number on the Jets +2.5. That game closes close to pick 'em, which is a big determinant of cashing tickets, getting the best of the number. So no matter the number, this is kind of a thing that I've always said. There is obviously key numbers, but no matter what I want to do, because it's good practice, is get the best number no matter what it is. That's the key to this entire thing. Whether it's 2.5 and it closes pick, you beat the market, you got the best number, and it's just kind of a good teaching point moving forward. You kind of want to get your reps, so to speak, as a bettor. And always getting the best number is the biggest thing. And it's one thing that we kind of talk about. There's kind of this dichotomy. Do I lay off the game completely now that I've got the worst of the number, or am I able to still determine there's an edge in this game, but I just limit my bet sizing a little bit because I didn't get the best of the number? For me, I tend to lean on having a leaner card, and if I don't get the very best of the number, I'm kind of staying off. It just really has to have a ton of value for me. The Jaguars were a perfect teaching point. I missed the 5, 5.5. I was not going to take 3.5. And I know a lot of people will say, like, hey, 3 is still that key number. Take 3.5. For me, I just hate missing the best number. And fortunately, it paid off kind of sitting on the Jaguars this week, not diving in at 3.5.
Yeah, and I kind of felt the same way myself. We knew the Detroit Lions were the sharp side in that particular game. We had talked about this before even recording the podcast 2 weeks ago, that we thought the number was going to trend in their favor. Didn't take 4.5. I didn't take 4. Hell, I didn't take 3.5. There was no way I was getting on board that game with 3. Yes, the Lions win the game outright, but long term, it's not a practice you want to try and employ. And I think if Payne and I can teach you anything as our loyal listeners here on Bet the Board, this is a marathon, not a sprint. If you have to pass on a game because you don't get the number that was out there at one point, it's not the end of the world. Don't feel like you have to run to the window for these games. Taking 1 if we're telling you to take 2.5 or 3. Tampa, another great example, Payne. We tell people on Tuesday, make sure you take the 3. I'm sure there were a lot of listeners that took 2.5, and when you watched the game late, yes, it didn't come into play, but there still is a bit of a sweat that starts to take place.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, you know, for me, you leave some money on the board, especially with the information that I have and the contacts that I have, and you know, they're still taking 3 on Detroit, and some of those games probably, you know, I need to learn to just limit the bet size a little bit more, still take that number. But for me, it's just so tough not getting the best of the number. And it's not to sound cocky or arrogant, I'm usually getting the best of the number. So when you don't, it's like, well, maybe I can sit this one out.
You, in the NFL, yes, getting the best of the number. College football, it's a bit of a different story for us these days.
It is a little bit of a different story. That being said, the market is completely different, and because there's so many teams and so many games, there's a lot of manipulation going on. I can sit here and tell you games like USC this week, 3 goops were pounding the Trojans, -16, closes 14.5 at one of the sharpest books. We saw situations like that. I know we were on San Diego State, laid 6.5. We're like, this is going to be, you know, up 17, up double digits late in that game. It does close 5.5, but the sharpest groups in the world are sitting there on San Diego State, and we're kind of scratching our heads. So there's instances where, you know, we're not going to get the best of the number.
Yeah, and there's a laundry list of college games where we saw major moves, 3, 3.5 points, which clearly weren't the right side. So the mentality that goes into handicapping an NFL card, distinctly different than college. I almost look at them as two different sports these days when it comes to some of my betting. Before we close the book on this segment, Payne, I do have a funny anecdote. One of my younger cousins just started betting, you know, recent graduate of college, has some discretionary income, was a little frustrated with the way his opening weekend went. Of course, doesn't listen to us and take the Bucks +3 on the podcast, which we give out, basically spoon feeding it, and proceeds to bitch to me last night about how he hates gambling. And we talk about the best of the number. Here's a guy, and I want you to offer him a little bit of advice, because it's different when it comes from somebody not related to him, who had the Giants and laid 1.5.
Well,
so you could, hey, you could take shots. You could throw him under the bus. I know he's going to be listening later today at the office, and this may jolt him back into reality. But I feel this is the perfect time to use it as a teaching moment.
Yeah, no, I mean, listen, that game was interesting. I'm probably, with that specific game, if I really like to side, if it's pick 'em or I'm laying one or I'm taking one, if I really like the side, I'm playing it. Fortunately, I didn't see much in that game, but as like a teaching point, again, I think one thing that we know about sports betting is there is nothing ABC, and there's math guys out there that'll crucify me because we're going to be doing this, this, and this. Well, there's a reason why math guys aren't overly successful and end up having to be employed by some of the sharpest groups, because having the numbers, having the math is like 1/10 of the elements needed to be a successful sports bettor. So from that perspective, I'm not going to kill him there in that game. I really wouldn't. But other games, you know, you got to do your best getting the best of the number. I'm not a big guy. You see it a lot on Twitter. Guys giving out picks and basically just chasing steam, taking bad numbers. And everybody, you know, one thing I will tell you is free isn't always free. So that's kind of, you know, someone told me that a couple weeks ago. It kind of stuck in my head. So free isn't always free. So you got to be careful. I mean, it doesn't take a lot of energy and effort to open up a Twitter account, chase steam, and give out games 2-3 numbers past it. And you just got to be very careful of that. Again, it comes back to the point. Take the best number when you can.
You know where you can get some of the best number or find a great out to add to your arsenal? BetOnline.ag. Always taking care of our Bet the Board listeners. Still some exclusive promotional codes. Hopefully you're able to take advantage of the 75% new account bonuses. But 50% bonus is still in effect. Use the promo code 50BTB. Get you up to 50% bonus on up to $1,000 deposit. So keep that in mind. Hopefully nobody needs to go in there and reload their accounts after week one. Payne, we threw out a poll last week for what movie we should break down. I want to thank everybody that contributed there. Both you and I took in War Dogs. And I'll get your initial take on what you thought of the flick.
I thought it was a solid movie. And in general, I like true stories that have a slightly entertaining enhancement to them. That's why I go to the movies. Jonah Hill probably needs to take a lesson from me and go to the cauliflower pizza. Maybe lay off the carbs just a touch. But other than that, I think this probably falls into my top three list so far in 2016, right behind The Infiltrator and Hell or High Water.
Yeah, I definitely thought the movie was entertaining and a nice bounce back from, well, because you weren't behind Don't Breathe. I'll say a nice bounce back from Don't Breathe for us there. Ephraim, you know, if I start to refer to you on the podcast, you know, it just may be mean that you need to try and focus on the diet and, you know, get out of the arms trade. So we'll try and figure out how that works going forward. But would encourage everybody who's looking for a light movie, some comedic value there, and a very interesting storyline, like always, based on a true story. Not sure how true some of the dialogue and whatnot was, but encourage you to go out there and invest the hour and 45 minutes of checking it out. Any idea, Payne, in terms of what direction we want to go this week, or folks can expect a poll on the Bet the Board Twitter feed later today or tomorrow?
Yeah, let's just go with that again. We got a lot of great feedback. It allows our audience to kind of get into the trenches with us, play a role in what we see, and hopefully our listeners don't really try to screw us here and send us to anything crazy. That said, we do have control with what the options of voting are for. So that's one positive thing. But yeah, we'll throw out another poll, whether it's today or tomorrow, and kind of list some movies and get your feedback on what we should see this week.
Yeah, always appreciate you, the loyal listener. You guys are the ones that make this podcast worth doing. So not only as it pertains to gambling, but some of the other pursuits out there recreationally throughout the course of the football season. But now what you guys have all been waiting for, two Monday night games on tap. The Monday night game breakdown provided courtesy of the American Gaming Association. Check out their website, AmericanGaming.org, and sign up for their newsletter, AmericanGaming.org/about/contact, or, of course, you can follow them on Twitter. Let's start with the early game in the nation's capital, a stone's throw from the AGA's home office, Payne. Pittsburgh now a 1.5-point road favorite, total of 49.5 at BetOnline.
Well, I don't feel so bad now for breaking your balls, because our producer did at the beginning of this little powwow before we got on air. There was a tweet apparently that said, and it wasn't written by me, that there was a tasty tidbit for tonight. So I would like to know who that tasty tidbit is, but I'm kind of leaving this up to you. You can go there.
You know, we're going to get there. We can, you know, break down this game. Had no idea this number was going to get absolutely obliterated before that. You know, we had the chance to share it with our loyal listeners here. But for me, this boils down to a couple of things. You look at a Washington team who we're not all that high on. I should preface this handicap that way. You look at the Redskins, a beneficiary last year of a very soft schedule, didn't beat a team with a winning record. Want to see if Kirk Cousins is able to replicate his performance. We saw, you know, him kind of show his true colors in the playoff game against Green Bay. We know about the Redskins' revamped secondary, bringing in Josh Norman. Now, if he's a fit schematically, that remains to be seen. But for me, this play boils down to Pittsburgh having some major questions regarding their weaponry. You know, no Le'Veon Bell. D'Angelo Williams is a suitable fill-in, but doesn't quite provide the dynamic threat coming out of the backfield. Marcus Wheaton downgraded to out over the weekend. So Big Ben, for all intents and purposes, really has one of his primary weapons in Antonio Brown. And when I look at some of the other members of that Pittsburgh receiving corps, no Martavis Bryant, I'm not sure Eli Rogers is ready to step into that role. When you have so many questions on that side of the ball, I didn't think Pittsburgh warranted a full 3-point favorite in this particular spot. You're welcome to dissent. And now the problem being is, as this number trends towards Pick'em, is there still any value in the Redskins?
This becomes extremely tough for me, and I think a lot of people have this problem in week one. How you grade out the teams coming in. So you nailed it. We're not very high on Washington. Just about every professional bettor went under their wins total at 7.5. Many professionals have a very promising outlook for the Pittsburgh Steelers, invested in some futures for the Super Bowl. So it becomes tough when you see a week one line and you say to yourself, hey, I'm high on Pittsburgh, down on Washington. But every game is its own entity and it has to be handicapped as such. And you're seeing it with this specific game here. Obviously, would love to take three. I am not going to endorse a play at 1.5. Maybe if you like something with the total here, you can pull out that 6-point teaser, get back above the 3, get back above the 7, and then tease it in which way you like with the total. I think if there is some correlation here to Washington, you would have to think this team that I think will struggle running the ball as they did last year, and then a couple guys go down in camp this year. There's no real great running back there, and you know Gruden likes to chuck it. This makes sense that we could see some fireworks in this game. So maybe potentially teasing Washington to the over might be the best value play at this current juncture.
What do you make of the move? We have seen movement on the total, but it's actually been to the under 50.5 down to 49, albeit, like you mentioned, still very early in the morning out here on the West Coast.
Yeah, I think you look at some of that weaponry that won't be available on Monday night, and then you potentially do some reading here, and you see Big Ben in that offense. Maybe they go a little more clock control, that defense, that secondary. Still some question marks there, but at the end of the day, you know, a Tiger still has its stripes. And when you look at Washington's offense, it's going to be an offense that likes to chuck the ball deep down the field. When you look at Pittsburgh, if they're going to have to play come from behind, it's a team that likes to pass the ball. So for me, don't absolutely love the total right now at 49. But when you add a teaser to it and you can get down through some of those huge key numbers, 44, it becomes a little more advantageous if you're looking to play this game. Again, at the current numbers, I'm not doing anything. But at the end of the day, we have a lot of people listening to this podcast where it's just fun. It's just a hobby. And maybe that's an avenue you want to look at, teasing Washington to the over.
And the second game, the nightcap out in San Francisco, you mentioned potential fireworks between Pittsburgh and Washington. I don't think anybody is going into this game thinking they're going to see fireworks. The Rams, a 3-point favorite. It is a soft 3 right now. You have to lay $1.25 at BetOnline if you want to back the dog. Total sits at 43. The beginning of the Chip Kelly era in San Francisco. And more importantly, Case Keenum retains his job as a starting quarterback for the LA Rams.
It is 43 now. We actually saw a little over money come in as we were recording this podcast. For me, again, not a ton here. This kind of feels like what we saw last year with the Vikings-San Francisco game. A lot of summer sharp action came in on the Vikings, and then game day money came on San Francisco. I think when this becomes the late night bailout game, there's not going to be that big of an appetite for San Francisco. I think you'll see some professionals at 3, you know, minus 10 come in on the dog here. I just can't do it with Chip Kelly at this point. It is a division game, so I think you're not going to get a Los Angeles team that's kind of looking ahead like the Vikings did last year. For me, with this total, I was pondering a first half under. The problem here is I just have to see what San Francisco is going to do offensively. They have to slow down, and I want to see if Chip Kelly
doesn't know how to slow down, though.
He's going to have to adapt, or he's going to go the way of the T-Rex. That's just inevitable here. So I think he's going to have to slow this down a little bit. There's just not that talent. There's just not that weaponry. If you want to go 3 and out, 3 and out, 3 and out, this game could potentially, you know, find its way over the total. I just don't like this total right now. I don't like this game at all. I am going to have to see something, come across the board, talk to a couple of different guys after this podcast, see if there's something that makes sense. But right now, I'm just not jumping into this game. My week one is already made. The money's already been made, and I have no problem sitting it out.
You're going to be able to stay awake from start to finish with a 10:20 kickoff time for you on the East Coast?
No, absolutely not.
All right. Well, I just say I appreciate your honesty. I wasn't sure if you were going to try and lie to our podcast listeners, tell them you were going to stay glued to your TV, maybe order yourself another cauliflower pizza and take full advantage.
No, absolutely not. I will be in bed before midnight. This new health kick we've been on for the past couple months.
Sleep and water, baby.
The best two vitamins you can give your body.
I mean, I'm proud of you for that. I know you like to bust my chops all the time about how I do too much cardio. It's too much this. You know, yoga is a joke. But I'm proud of you turning over a new leaf in your overall health and wellness. You're not getting any younger over there, buddy.
I am not getting any younger. And last year we started around week 10. It was just miserable. I was out of energy. So changed the diet a little bit, and we're moving forward. The cauliflower pizza, though. That needs to be eaten in smaller doses. So that's kind of the key to success for the cauliflower pizza.
It can be exhausting dealing with meat twice a week. Guys, I want to thank everybody for listening. You guys made our week one podcast one of the most listened to episodes we've ever done here. You want to show support for the podcast? Go on to BetTheBoardPodcast.com, buy a t-shirt or six. The holidays are right around the corner. Limited supplies for all of them. And Payne would like to put food on the table. So, Payne, what can they expect there as far as merchandise is concerned?
Well, we finally got some of the t-shirts in. That's the positive news here. This was kind of a fun little venture for us. We've never done it before. We decided not to go balls deep, as the saying, I guess, Clay Travis style, and investing, you know, hundreds of thousands of dollars in pants. But we got a few t-shirts up there. And they are available for purchase right now. Fun gambling tees. So go to BetTheBoardPodcast.com. You can get all your gambling merchandise there.
Be sure to check that out. Subscribe to the Bet the Board podcast, SoundCloud, iTunes, or check us out at with our new distribution partner, OutkickTheCoverage.com. For Payne Insider, follow him on Twitter at Payne Insider. Our faithful producer, Sam Paniadovich, you can follow him on Twitter as well at SP Shoot. Dave Mason at Dave Mason BOL will be back on Thursday to talk about how opening week was for the house and what to expect the second week of the season. I am Todd Furman. You can follow me there at Todd Furman. Bet the Board podcast, episode 3. Enjoy the tandem of Monday Night Football games, and we'll be right back with you later in the week to break down all the attractive options on the week 2 slate.